Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 22 of the Theatrical Mustang podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik. I've been out sick for a couple of weeks. I had a bout with bronchitis, but all is well now. I'm feeling back up to snuff. A big thank you to Andy for guest hosting the previous episode. Check that one out. This episode is with my good friend, Jennifer Klaus, and she directed Copious Love's production of Tap House. And I got to see the show Saturday night, and it was freaking awesome. It's a modern adaptation of Chekhov's Three Sisters. It's playing at the Ballard Underground. You should totally check it out. It runs through June 20th. To learn more about the production and all things Copious Love, you can visit copiouslove.org. And that's all I'm going to say. This is a really awesome episode. It was really fun to sit down with Jen on the set. And I hope you enjoy episode 22. So I'm sitting here with Jennifer Klaus on the set, on the stage of Tap House, which just opened last night with Copious Love Productions.
Right.
Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
So tell me about this play. It looks like I'm in a bar.
You are.
Right now.
Yes.
I am. And so it's an adaptation of a Chekhov play, is it not?
It is. Kiki Panoyer wrote an adaptation of Chekhov's Three Sisters that takes place in the Northwest, specifically Bellingham, but it's never really mentioned that it's Bellingham,
right.
But sleepy college town where people tend to want to go and then end up staying because they don't feel like they can go anywhere else.
Right.
And so in the traditional sense of the Three Sisters, you know, they're always wanting to go to Moscow. The characters in this play find themselves wanting to get out, but unable to move. And so in that sense, the set stays where it is the entire time. And it is a set in the bar in Bellingham.
And we're in the Ballard Underground space right now.
Right.
Which is such an, it's a true black box. I mean, I think I've seen three or four shows here.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been, the stage has been a different orientation each time.
Yes.
So how long were you attached to this project? Is it something that you brought to Copious Love Productions, or is it, how did that process work?
Chelsea Madsen, who is the artistic director, she approached me in August to direct the show, and I immediately said yes, mostly, and this is actually pretty funny, because I don't really like Chekhov, but I like taking plays or taking projects that I don't like or am not comfortable with so that I can create something out of them that I am comfortable and excited about. And so the minute that she approached me, I immediately went into designer mode and came up with sketches and ideas of things that I want. And the idea that I came up with was keeping the audience as uncomfortable as the people on stage are with staying in the space. So if you notice, the space is very long. It's already awkward under here because of the way that this theater is positioned.
Sure.
The unfortunate pole right behind you gets in the way of a lot of things and has traditionally here at the Ballard Underground. But instead of trying to work around it, we just incorporated it into the way that we designed the set.
Awesome.
Jessica Pickett, who was the official set designer, and Missy King, who constructed the set, we worked together to come up with a very diagonal way of kind of making everybody feel a little off kilter. And so that's basically the way. I wanted to make sure the audience felt like they should leave, but they can't because they're here for the show.
Right. So tell me about your cast.
Oh my gosh, my cast is beautiful. We do have a Masha, and the Masha is a direct translation from the Chekhov's Three Sisters. She's played by Brittany Reinholtz, and Brittany sings and acts, and she laughs hard, and she cries hard, and she is able to access all of Masha from both the Chekhov and Tap House's version of her. And she just owns the stage the minute that she walks on. I've got Corinne Marie playing Emmeline, who is the youngest of the three sisters in the traditional sense. And she is probably the steeliest character. She's innocent and sweet and delightful and young, but she has a steel wool texture to her because you know that she's run and she's worked in this place for so long. She's used to the people here and she's used to working in that bar type situation. Our third sister is actually the person who manages the bar, and that's Nellie, and she's played by Karen Jo Fairbrook. And she is one of the most real presences on stage that I've seen in a really long time. She just looks like she belongs there. And that's a really rare trait I find in a lot of actors. Then I have my three soldiers. Claude, who's played by Neil Hobson. And Rooster, who's played by Tyler Elwell. And Liam, who's played by Chris Trover. And what I didn't know was that a bunch of my actors actually had worked together before on various projects. Seattle, as much as we like to think it's a big community, is actually a really small theater community.
Right.
And so, but I didn't realize that a ton of my actors had worked together before. So when I saw these three actors work together as the soldiers, it was like they'd known each other for years.
Sure.
And that sense of history automatically showed, which I knew I had to have. Then we've got Felix, who is Masha's piano player, and he is very much OCD. He has a very anxious nature about him. He's played by Justin Johns, who actually plays the piano and accompanies Brittany in singing during the show. And his love interest on stage is Lindsay. And Lindsay is probably the most different out of everybody in the cast. She is young. She is new. She loves everything that is hip. Oh, I'm sorry. She can't say hip because no one says hip. She's very, very cool and loves fashion. And I don't want to tell you too much about her because she is a gem to watch on stage. I don't want to ruin the surprise. Then we have Masha's husband, Roger, who's played by Tom Stewart.
I love Tom too.
And he is...
We love you, Tom.
He plays a professor, which, as you imagine, he would be really great at.
What a stretch.
Yeah, I know. Especially an English teacher. He even has a jacket with the patches on it. And he just looks totally normal in it. And he's wonderful. And then we have Michael Ramquist playing Harrison, who is the bar's oldest and most loyal patron. And he feels like he is really nothing, but the wisdom that he brings in the things that he says in the simplest way is a wonderful juxtaposition in the writing. And Kiki's really good at that. So I love the parallels and then the juxtapositions that she brings in to the writing of the script.
Let's talk a little bit about Kiki, because it's a new name for me. Is she local? Or
she is local. I don't know when she graduated, but she came down from Bellingham, I think a couple years ago. She works with Stage Right. She does the Downstage Right short productions.
Okay.
And this is her first major work to be produced on stage. From what I understand, she has been writing this piece for 5 years. I don't even, it's how do you,
that commitment.
Right? And it's like raising a child. You start out with this tiny idea and just watch it grow and watch it change and watch it kind of get away from you a little bit and watch you rein it in and learning how to control it. And I can't even imagine that level of commitment and trust giving your piece to somebody to produce.
So is this a world premiere then?
Technically, yes. She has done stage readings of it before. They did a small version of it a couple of years ago, but this is the first time it has been actually produced by a theater company, from what I understand.
Did she propose it to Copious? What's the production history in terms of how this project got brought to Copious Love?
So Copious Love Productions, they're a Seattle theater company that only does original work. And so every year they have a call for scripts and they get hundreds of scripts and they read all of them. And the production team decides what's going to be in their next season. And this is the first, I believe, of their third season. So I'm really excited.
I'm very excited. And I'm also excited for Codename Kansas.
Yes.
Which is coming in the fall.
It'll be around Halloween time. Mm-hmm.
In the 12th Avenue Art Space. Which
yes.
Is
brand new, gorgeous. You walk in there and get real excited.
Nicole was on the podcast earlier, mm-hmm. and she just seems super dynamic.
She
too.
Is so
two
dynamic.
Female directors. So awesome. I love it.
She's loving it. She actually came to the show last night and had a great time. So, yeah.
Awesome.
It was wonderful.
What else do you want audiences to know about this production?
How different it is from anything else that Copious Love has done. They love to do a lot of interactive theater, which is something that isn't really seen a ton in Seattle. And so this play is a little bit harder to create that interactive atmosphere. So we kind of came up with a couple different ways to get involved. One is the VIP tables, where you're guaranteed a front row seat and two drinks with your ticket. It's only a little bit more to pay for the VIP tickets, and they're actually kind of on the stage. Now, not so much that you're actually on display for people, but you actually feel like you're inside the bar because you're closer. Sure. We're actually sitting at one right now.
Indeed, we are.
And the other way that we came up with was there's a photo booth. So if you ever go to like a bar that's been around for a really long time and you look behind the actual bar itself, and there's all these Polaroids of parties and people that have come in there.
Right.
And my set didn't have that, so we came up with a photo booth where people can make a donation between $1 and $5 to put their photo actually up on the set. And we've started stage left, but we will eventually, through the full run, have people who have come to Coleman's Tap House and become part of the atmosphere.
I'm going to get my picture up there.
I hope
What's
you do.
Happening tonight. Can I get taken with you?
Of course.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Done and done. So you opened last night.
Right.
And it goes through the 20th?
The 20th, yes.
And where's the best place for people to get information and tickets and all that good jazz?
copiouslubproductions.com? One of them.
We will post that in the episode description.
Great.
Fantastic. And so you can just click on that.
Or you
they're
can,
also on Facebook,
They're
right?
also on Facebook, Copious Love Productions. Or you can go to clptaphouse.bpt.me.
Fantastic.
Yes, that's where you get your tickets from, Brown Paper Tickets.
Let's talk a little bit more about Copious Love.
Sure.
Because you were generous enough about a month or two ago to invite me to their writers group.
Yes.
And it was such a supportive and dynamic, artistic couple of hours.
Right.
And I was so grateful to be there.
Right.
And just the vibe that they have is so awesome and welcoming.
It is welcoming.
And so I'd just like to talk about the company a little bit.
Absolutely.
More.
Well, Copious Love Productions is actually a production company that lives up to its name. There's a reason why they're called Copious Love. A couple years ago when I was running my own company, Rogue Theatrics, they came to a lot of my shows and reviewed them. And
I remember that for Cloud Nine.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they did it for almost all of the shows that we did. And it was always... It wasn't, even if they had something kind of critique-y to say, it was always done in such a positive light. And I found that really valuable because we have some people in Seattle who get a little bit mean with their criticisms, I really find. But Copious Love, they want to support other theater. They want to support other artists. And I find that that is so refreshing. And it's kind of started to change the way that theater is done in Seattle, because now they have the Hive experience, where theater companies and other art companies can go and talk about how we work together. And there's lots of different ways that Copious Love does that. And one of them is the Copious Love Suggests, which is actually you did one for Bunnies.
Was honored to write up that. And I think that's a... That's so great. There have been people posting, I don't know if you saw this piece that's been going around about, is it sour lemon or bitter lemon, or about how companies often have to pay for a review or...
Right.
And it's sort of like crowdsourcing. Mm-hmm. It's like Wikipedia, but classier for local theater productions.
Oh, I haven't seen that. That's really interesting.
No, I mean Copious Love is.
Oh, and yes.
So,
you are absolutely correct.
Contrasting that about how... Okay. It's like the opposite of that.
Right, okay, yes.
They're making sure that they're sending out disciples is the word that comes to mind. That's absolutely like not what I want.
No, you're
representatives,
not.
Representatives, right?
But you're not far off.
Yeah.
Because once you get involved with Copious Love, you don't want to leave. Because there's such a nurturing, welcoming all-encompassing environment. The minute that you work with them, it's like their arms are always open to you. I can't even tell you the times that I've needed them, and they've all been there for me. And even in a personal sense, not just always in theater. And they're all like that, every single one of them.
When you say they, let's give some our copious love to copious love. Absolutely. Who's their artistic director?
Okay, so the president is Lacey Gavilanis, and she and her husband Tony Gavilanis and Chelsea Madsen started Copious Love together a couple years ago, and they started doing works of their own writing. This is actually the first time Tap House is the first outside non-Copious Love writer that they have produced, Wow. Which is also really exciting.
Yeah.
So they started it and they got a whole bunch of their friends together, and all three of them, Chelsea Madsen is the artistic director and Tony Gavilanis is, I believe, the technical director
Okay. Of
the company. And those are the main three people. And of course there's the rest of us who are just really excited to be there.
Along for the ride.
Absolutely. But I knew that going back to Rogue, they came to a couple of the shows, and every single time I saw them, they were always so excited to be there, and they were always so excited to be involved. And their nurturing, welcoming environment doesn't just extend to the things that they see. It extends to people they invite in as well. And they're always inviting new people in, as you saw with the writers group. They love to nurture new artists. They love to nurture people who just need to hear something. Like if they have written something, maybe if it's a speech for work, or it is a play, or it's just something that they need to hear out loud, the writers group is there to be that environment for them. And it's such an easy, it's just an easy way to spend your Wednesday nights.
Right.
It's wonderful. Let's see. So we have the Suggests and the Writers Group. And those are the main things besides the productions that they put on that Copious Love does.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about you now.
Uh-oh.
Can we go back? Let's go back to your... I like to call it, like, the origin story as an artist.
Sure.
Is there a defining moment of your childhood when you fell in love with theater, you started kind of maybe performing or telling people what to do, and there was that, like, sort of inner bell?
Sure. Well, when I was little, I was always putting on shows in the backyard, but they were always starring me. I always wanted to be on stage.
Uh-huh.
That was where my true passion lied, and... Lied? I don't know. That's where it was. And so I grew up and I just started auditioning for everything under the sun.
And where was this?
Puyallup and Tacoma. That's okay. Where I grew up. And then, of course, high school theater. And, of course, there was always kind of a size issue because I'm a bigger person. And so I never got the roles I thought that I was entitled to getting.
So I so hear you. It's so freaking hard. I mean, like,
it's
were you playing
hard.
Moms and grandmas and, like, mm-hmm. the older character
right.
kind of parts?
Well, I remember I was in an unnamed production. I was in the chorus of something. And I was actually the second understudy for the lead role. And one day, both the lead actress and the understudy couldn't be there, so I sang the role. And it was just in a rehearsal. It wasn't anything fancy.
Sure.
And afterwards, I got a lot of people going, wow, that was really great. It was amazing. But, you know, it was a love story, so I had to be romantic with the tenor who was opposite me. And the director of this production actually came up to me and she was like, that was really great. And I said, thank you very much. And she said, I'm sorry that you'll never be able to be a leading lady. And I said, why? And she said, because it's unrealistic that a man would fall in love with you.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So there's, even from women, there is that stigma that larger ladies don't have a place on stage. But I will tell you, that I did theater all over Tacoma, and every year the Missoula Children's Theater would come through.
Yes.
And I would always audition for the Missoula Children's Theater, and I would always be a part of it, and I always loved it.
Yeah.
And we did the shows at the Pantages, which is a very beautiful old vaudeville house. And the acoustics are terrible, but they're it's a beautiful house, and it feels very real, especially for a kid who just has stars in her eyes.
Yeah.
And I remember... going and getting there early and looking at all the actors who were the adults that were traveling with the troupe. And I wanted to be just like them. They had their really cool theater hats, like the alternative hats, like the Newsboys caps that were really big, sure, in the 90s. Yep. They had their vests and scarves, and they had a cup of hot tea and their script and their pencil.
Yes.
And I wanted to be just like them. Well, fast forward many, many, many years later, I got a job singing for Professor Peter Schickele, who is also known as P.D.Q. Bach. And...
No, I'm just remembering high school and singing his pieces.
Yes.
My mind is being blown right now.
He is, and he's a delightful human being. He's just one of the sweetest, loveliest people. And if you think his music is wonderful, he is even more wonderful than his music is. He's just a delight. Anyway, so I got hired. It's kind of a fluke how I got hired, but I got hired and to sing the soprano role. And it was in the Pantages Theater. And I was so excited to kind of go back to where I was a child.
Right.
And I walked downstairs, and there are all of these little kids there ready to do a ballet. It was for a rehearsal for the show.
Yeah.
And there's all these little kids in the ballet. And I was just like, oh, my God, I just was one of those kids. And then I looked in the mirror, and I had an artistic hat. And I was wearing my scarf. And I had a cup of tea in one hand and my music and my pencil in the other one. And it was that moment that I realized I had become everything I ever wanted to be, though the road getting there wasn't what I had planned. And it was one of the most defining moments of my life. And later that summer, I actually went and sang in Avery Fisher Hall. And then that moment, I realized... I have done everything I've ever set out to do, ever. Sang professionally in New York, sang with a man as famous and wonderful as P.D.Q. Bach. And from there, you start to wonder, well, okay, I'm 29. I've done everything I've ever set out to do. Where do you go from there? And it's that blank slate that kind of led me to the fact that I really wanted to move into a more directorial area of my life.
I'm getting teared up a little bit over here. And I just want to say, going off that story, it makes me so mad that that high school teacher said that to you. And I think it's just really important for those of you who are listening, for our audience, define success for yourself. Don't let one crappy teacher or director or mm-hmm. acting coach throw you off the path forever, because
right.
I think as the landscape is changing, I'm thinking a little bit about Fun Home, the Alison Bechdel musical that's on Broadway right now.
Right.
And the leading actress, and I'm not remembering her name, but I have a friend who's going to the same school that she went to, and she's gay, and mm-hmm. she's saying when she has to go through all these musical theater roles and
sure.
be wigged and be very feminine, she thinks of it as being like a drag queen, because that's not her, that's not the kind of character she wants to portray.
Interesting.
But I think the theatrical landscape is changing, and so now she gets to play Alison Bechdel on Broadway, right?
Right.
And so I think, I'm optimistic for little girls to grow up, no matter what size they are,
right,
and think that they can have whatever part that they want to.
Or even how they identify, and that is something that I think is slowly starting to change the world of trans actors
yes.
becoming mainstream. I'm making bunny ears right now, because they are obviously very mainstream, but it's not the acceptable part of mainstream just yet. There's a local playwright, his name is Seth Tankus. He writes a lot of trans theater, and I kind of feel sad because I can't be a part of him because I'm not a trans person. But I think that's a place that we need to go. And what's really exciting is that Copious Love, in very clearly, in big bold letters on every audition announcement, it says, audition for the part that you want, no matter who you are. We accept all races, all gender identifications. If you want to play a gentleman and you feel that you are ready for that particular role, please audition for it, and we will consider you very seriously. Because
right.
Copious Love is all about that. And that is so exciting to me. I love that.
And I think I think we need more companies like that. I think
I agree.
We need more audition notices like that. Or even I've seen I don't know if it's something specific to Seattle, but when I read scripts like by Courtney Meeker, even playwrights putting in,
right,
you know, families need not be of the same race. They don't need to all be able-bodied and white.
Exactly.
And just putting that on the page as the playwright or as the casting director on mm-hmm. the notice, that opens up a world of possibilities.
Absolutely. And whenever I write a piece, I do a lot of short work because it's easier, and I've been working on a play for a long time, but I just am pushing it off, which is my, it's my, my, oh man, I can't even think of the word. I write plays. I'm good at it. I like words. but I always make them very gender neutral. Like, right. Most of the time they're very off the wall. The latest one I wrote was about, bankers. And so it was banker one and banker two. And
I love reading that.
Right. And so it was just, I like to make sure that things are equal for everybody, even in the pieces that I write. Because I don't think that gender has to do with the point of my story. I don't think, you know, you being a size zero doesn't have to do with
that
the point of
the
my story.
Forward.
Absolutely. Unless it specifically
that.
Does.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't think that drives me crazy. I don't think it matters.
Glad we're talking about it.
Absolutely.
It makes me happy.
And no matter what size you are, you can be a size 45 and you can be a size zero or below a zero. You are still worthy of the same amount of love as the person sitting next to you. And for people who don't think that that's true, or for that person who told me that it's not realistic, that I would be loved by a man, that is such an old way of thinking. And we need to stop thinking that way.
Adjust our perspective. Something I like mm-hmm. to do when I'm reading a play or when I'm seeing a movie, and it goes kind of back to the Bechdel test, right?
Sure.
You know, like, are there two named female characters who have a conversation with each other that's something other than
a man?
A man.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing how many plays, how many movies don't pass that test.
Absolutely.
But looking through it with the lens of, oh, does this person have to be a man? Because I think it's just sort of ingrained in people, right? It's what mm-hmm. they're comfortable with. It's what society has perpetuated for so long.
Right. So would it be different if it was two women speaking about a female lover or a female love interest?
Right.
Would that pass the Bechdel test? I don't know if it would, because it's the same. Even if they're talking about a man, it's the same thing. They're talking about romantic relationships.
And I think about this. There's this, it's one of the Reitmans in LA has a screenwriting, a series where he produces actors reading screenplays, like really great screenplays out loud in
okay.
a theatrical, you know, like a stage
sure.
reading. And he did 12 Angry Men with all women. And he
oh
had
my gosh.
Kathleen Turner, and he had Robin Wright Penn. Well, it's not Robin Wright Penn anymore.
Just Robin
it's just
Wright.
Robin Wright.
Yep.
And I just want to say, I encourage that sort of liberal mindedness and mm-hmm. shifting the paradigm, and support people who do that.
Right.
Listeners, please, please, pretty please.
Just go out and love everybody. That's all you got to do. Just love everybody.
This is like getting really intense. I love it.
We don't joke about love around here. I'm just saying.
It's all about, well, copious love.
Copious love.
Let's talk about what's next for you in terms of artistic projects?
I just got approached by King's Players to direct their 2016 production, and it'll be HMS Pinafore this year, which is so much fun because it is so silly, and it's something that also speaks to my personal beliefs because it's all about class and
yeah.
what is acceptable from people who are in particular classes. And that is, as a very outspoken socialist, is something I'm very passionate about. And the best thing about that is it's Gilbert and Sullivan, and the music is delightful, and the jokes are very silly. And so it gives you the same message in a very non-confrontational way. And we're going to try and make it as accessible as possible, because there is a very specific niche for Gilbert and Sullivan. People either love them or they hate it.
Sure.
But I want people to love it. And so it's being about class, it kind of speaks closer to my heart.
When does that production go up?
February 2016.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you sort of bring a unique, not sort of, you bring a unique perspective to your theater artistry because you have strong roots in music.
Right.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
My strong roots in music?
What training do you have? You talked about your singing a little bit.
Sure. Well, I've been singing since I was about a fetus. And
within
my mother's womb. Well, my mom is a classical musician. She's also a choir teacher and a singer. But when she was pregnant with me, she was also playing the violin quite a bit. So I was kind of doomed from the beginning. And
doomed, blessed. Thing.
And my dad was a band director and a musician as well. So I grew up in a very, very musical household. It's like Christmas is like the Von Trapp family in my house. We have carol books and everybody picks a part and we all sing in four-part harmony and my dad plays the guitar and my mom plays the piano and it's kind of ridiculous,
amazing.
I'll be honest. It's very funny to bring a significant other home who is not musical and watch the panic wash over their face. I have a lot of classical training. I thought I wanted to be an opera singer for a while, but my vocal cords just, they can't sustain that type of, it's like, opera's like the Olympics of singing.
Absolutely.
And you have to be in tip-top condition, and sometimes you just don't have the physical structure to do that, and my voice is not that way. I can sing very light classical music all day long. Early classical is probably my bread and butter. I do a lot of weddings and stuff and sing very early music for that. And when I was 10, I joined a choir, the Homo Girls Choir. And my director, Dr. Vansel, was one of those people who could inspire you just by getting excited about what he was talking about. He had a passion in him for music history and music learning. And between him and my mother and my dad who taught me theory, I just kind of knew that's where I loved to be. So I actually went through all of my years of high school and college as a music major until I figured out that wasn't the direction I really wanted to take. And but I still love performing. I don't do it very often anymore, but when I do, it's very fun.
You recently were Eulalie McKechnie Shin with the Grishnerns in a fountain, were you not?
I was indeed. And if I'm going to perform, that's the kind of role that I would usually take because it's incredibly silly and fun and not, if I'm going to be on stage, it's going to have to be a very specific environment. And the conditions are right for you lately because she's every woman's worst nightmare, that woman. And
she was a real housewife before there were real housewives.
She was the she was the original housewife of River City.
Real Housewives of Iowa.
That's right. But yes, I do perform. I do every now and then. I find very comfortable the director's desk.
Why do you think that is?
Probably because I'm so controlling.
Hashtag honesty.
That's right. And I love telling people what to do. Actually, it really has more to do with the fact that I love, when you're an actor, you really have to worry the majority of the time about your character.
Right.
And how your character relates to the other characters, relates to the story, relates to the plot, relates to everything. But it's always your character.
It's an internal process.
Absolutely. And directing is about the vision and putting it all together. And it's a completely different experience. And I love going into the mode of the design. I love going into the beats. I love going into the character development. I love going into that creative history and all that table work that goes into the thing before you actually start even directing at all or even casting at all. Once you get to know that process and that about yourself, becomes a lot easier to just keep doing that over and over and over. And I just feel so much more comfortable putting that puzzle piece, fitting it, and making it one whole picture, as opposed to that internal process of finding that within you and expanding outwards.
Sure.
Directing is all about finding that large piece and putting it inside the audience. And so it's a very opposite process, which I really enjoy.
What's on your bucket list as a director? What pieces are you drawn to overall, would you say?
Scottish play.
Ooh.
I have to do it. And it's... the way that I want to do it, and I'll only give you a little bit of information about that, because if I actually do it, then I want people to come see it because it's
right.
exciting. The main question in that show is the role of the witches, because without the witches, it's a very basic story of a man desiring power, being coerced into that power, killing for that power, becoming so much of that power that he eventually dies by that power. It's a pretty basic story.
Sure.
But the witches beg the question, are they telling the story or are they creating the story? And you have to decide which one is which before you actually put that into production. The majority of the time that I've seen, at least, the witches are telling the story. They may become a part of the story, but they never make it clear whether or not the witches created Macbeth to be the monster that he is. And in my version, it's very clear that the witches created and conducted.
I get chills right now.
And maneuvered and manipulated this whole situation. And to personify that in my production, don't take my secrets because I'll know it's me. So you who are listening, don't take my design ideas.
Copyright Jennifer Klaus.
Is to have a completely black stage. And have an entire tribe of witches, three different tribes of witches. And as the story progresses, they draw the set.
Mm.
They create the set with chalk paint. And other things that they do too, but that's the main idea, is to have just a completely blank slate and they create the
wow.
situation. So I've always wanted to do that.
So freaking cool.
So Macbeth is
on the horizon. You seem
hopeful.
Very, whether it's out a couple years or whatever, but I think one of the unique things about you, that's one of your biggest strengths as a theater artist, is you make shit happen.
You know what
I mean? You're very productive isn't the word, but very decisive and you know how to rally people around an idea, and if there needs to be a unicorn with leopard print mane, it's by gum, it's
going to
be
happen.
There.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no wavering. Clarity of vision, I would say.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. I try to avoid terms of I'm right as opposed to... what I do ask of people that I work with is that they trust me. And sometimes it's harder to do if you don't know me and what I've done before. So I've never had that with Copious Love because they inherently trust
right.
my visions. But it has been before where people have kind of questioned the, is this going to happen or not? And I can tell you that if it's within my power to do, I will do it. And whether or not you like that as an audience member actually means that I've succeeded either way. Because if you come to one of my shows and there is something about the production that you don't like, and you sit there and you decide what it is that you don't like about it, you thought about my piece. That's the whole point of theater. Whenever I put on a production, I always try and find the truth. That is what theater's for. And whether or not you agree with that particular truth means that we've connected and communicated in some way. And that's the point. And it's very exciting.
As we sort of wind down a little bit here, what advice do you have for theater artists, either actors or directors? audience members, whoever you want to give advice to.
Oh, gosh. I kind of feel like I really shouldn't be giving a lot of advice to lots of people. mostly because it's like drink a glass of wine a day, and at least one glass of wine a day. but probably it's to take risks. I have in my rehearsal... no words today. In my rehearsal process, I have a very strict no, I'm sorry policy. If an actor gets something wrong, or if they do something that they don't think I'm going to like, or if I stop the production and say we need to go back and they say I'm sorry, they owe me a dollar.
Wow.
Because if they are making... If they're saying they're sorry, it means they made a decision that they felt that I wouldn't agree with. But they're taking chances. And they're making decisions. They're trying new things. And that is something I never, ever want someone to feel sorry for.
Yeah.
Because that's important, especially as you're figuring out not only your character, but where you are as an artist in your life. No one is ever at 100% max level. People are always improving. Always. And if you feel like you've done improving, then you need to find something new about yourself. Because there's no way that you can ever stop improving. Ever. I don't care if you're Meryl Streep, who is amazing and can do anything that she wants. She could play Batman, and I'd be absolutely on board with that. But people think that she's reached max level. But I completely don't think there's something, such thing as max level, especially for artists. Because artists always seem new. And they always want to see new. And whether if they're not seeing anything new, they need to put on a new pair of glasses. Or they need to start hearing instead of looking. They need to get a change of perspective because that will always make them evolve. And that's the whole point of being an artist, is to keep evolving.
Well, if that's not a button on this interview, I don't know what is. So Tap House runs through June 20th at the Ballard Underground. We're going to have all the information in the episode description. Come see it. Check out Copious Love Productions. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you. This was really fun.